And joining me right now here on the phone line, talk some sports here on a Wednesday. He's my good friend and local broadcaster, PA announcer, J.C. Meyerholtz. J.C., how you doing today?
Doing fine, Mark. Running errands. Always a fun time of life, right?
Man, you are James Bond. That's what you are. You're
like, I'll tell you, Brevard County traffic, it's getting worse, although I think the snowbirds are pretty much gone. It's a lot worse in January and February, I guess.
I understand. I thought of you yesterday because on air I was talking about how I had to be a wrestling ring announcer and pretty much be the PA announcer a couple weeks ago in South Florida. And I made this comment where I don't like the pressure of being a PA announcer. You are a stud at it, a pro. Huh. Man, I give you all the credit. Your job is not easy at football and basketball and baseball games. So I want you to know that.
You know, it's not really as hard as you think. You just, the big stickler with PA or play-by-play, but, you know, particularly with PA, you know, you got to get the names right. And, yes. You know, with kind of the international flavor of Florida Tech, both us and our opponents, there are always some very interesting, like, Russian names or Slovakian names. So, but, once the game gets going, you know, the pregame stuff kind of gets to be a lot. Mm-hmm. But once the game starts, I'm fine. It's pretty relaxing work.
What do you think is the easiest one to do, football, baseball, or basketball for PA?
I've done minor league hockey. That's probably the hardest. I haven't done that in a few years because, you know, you can have a penalty, you can have a goal, you know. But probably baseball's easiest because it's just kind of a slow pace. You know, the batter comes up and you say, now batting the shortstop number 25, Mark Moses. And then there's, you know, kind of a break, you know, until the next batter. You know, basketball's a little more, you know, up and down. You don't know when the next foul's going to be or the next basket. So, you know, you just got to be, you know, you got to be paying attention, particularly in basketball. You shouldn't be on your phone or doing tweeting or stuff like that. That would drive me crazy. Fortunately, Florida Tech doesn't require me to tweet. So
no, they shouldn't. All right. So you're right. Basketball, every time someone scores, you got to say who scored. You got to do that.
Right.
You don't give the score, though. You know, after every basket, you don't do that. But let's say, you know, roster player scores a layup, you know, two-point basket for roster player. You say timeout on the court. I'm trying to think what else you would say. Personal foul number three. But usually aren't you looking for the ref to try to figure out who the foul's on? Isn't that the hard part?
Yeah, and, you know, the officials are usually pretty good in our conference. I mean, they'll come up pretty close to the table and clearly indicate who the foul's on. Now, I'll tell you, I would hate to be an NBA PA announcer. Not that I'd ever get the job. I mean, those jobs are really tough to get. But you ever notice when you watch an NBA game, it seems like the officials are a mile away when they put up their fingers and call a foul. And, you know, Paul Porter, the guy who does the Magic, I mean, I think he's been there since day one. He does a great job. But you better have good eyesight because, you know, it seems like the official's always on the other side of the court and you have to – oh, gee, is that a 3-2 or a 4-2? And, you know, I guess, Paul Porter's been doing it even longer than me, so it's pretty easy. You know, Florida Tech, the officials get pretty close, and it's good that they audio it, too. Okay, white foul, 42, hold, two shots, you know, that kind of thing.
Hockey, okay, aren't you supposed to be delayed? You know, it's like someone scores a goal. Like, even at the NHL level, you don't say goal right away. Don't you wait? Like, it's like usually when they get to the face-off after the goal, then you announce who scored it, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I was like the backup guy for the Bakersfield Condors. You know, I lived in Bakersfield for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
I was able to latch on to the minor league hockey job. You know, they had the regular guy, but, you know, if he had a conflict or got sick or something, I was the backup person. I probably did a total of like 4 games in 6 years. It wasn't a lot, but usually for hockey, you've got a spotter there saying, you know, who the penalty is on, because sometimes the official would do it real quick. So, and then, you know, the person helping me would, you know, point to the number on the roster and the player and all that. And then the goal, you know, sometimes you don't know if it's a deflection in front, so you got to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Or, you know, was there a second assist? So I think in hockey, having a spotter, and there's this, I remember this woman, you know, she was very, very helpful. That's probably the toughest part of hockey. But again, you know, hockey is even more unpredictable than basketball because you never really know when a penalty or a goal is coming up. You know, basketball, they're usually, you know, a lot of
you
points. And then in baseball, it's really, to me, it's kind of laid back.
Do you, in baseball, and I love this conversation, by the way. So,
oh, you do? Okay, so, all our listeners.
Oh, you know, so, okay, so someone hits a home run. Do you, what do you say? Do you say, well, do you wait till they cross home plate, then say someone hit the home run? What do you do?
You know, sometimes I don't even do that. Maybe I should. You know, the modern baseball PA guy from 40 years ago never would have really, you know, done that. But PA announcers over the years, they've become more homers and more excited when the home team does something well. That probably is something. And I did do a little bit of baseball PA when I wasn't doing the, you know, play-by-play. No, I just pretty much just announced the batters and the, what else, the pitching changes. Mm. You know, whenever something kind of changes, you know, defensive replacement, you know, comes into the game. But, yeah, the modern-day announcer, I guess they get on and say, oh, Mark Moses with a three-run homer. You know, and they get all excited. So,
all right, so football, JC said this. So you have your spotter. What does the spotter do exactly for you, especially in football?
Well, I'll tell you, football's really tough because I miss Florida Tech football. I mean, that was a great, what was it, 7-year run when we had a college football program here, and our head coach was really a great guy, and he did a good job. In fact, he's the, I'm missing his name right now, but he's the coach at Presbyterian up in the Carolinas.
Steve Englehart. That's our guy.
Englehart. Yeah, I think I'm getting older. I'm like forgetting names. Yeah, Englehart. What a nice guy. I'm really glad I think he took like a couple of years off and then he latched on Presbyterian. But to answer your question, very important in football to have a good spotter because you're always trying to dissect the tackles and the spotter has a tough job. I mean, I think if you're a spotter in football, you probably get mentally exhausted. I think you're kind of like a home plate umpire after 9 innings. Your eyes get real weary,
dude,
because you know you're looking through binoculars trying to dissect the tackle. So I had a really good spotter for Florida Tech football. So my part of the job is really kind of easy,
dude. For high school football, you know, some of the jerseys very basic. It's very hard to see the numbers sometimes, right? And you just I think it's extremely hard for that, Ben. And so it's like, okay, every play you have to, okay, let's say someone completes a 7-yard pass. You've got to say who caught the ball, and then you have to do what? Who got the tackle? And then you got to say what down and yardage is. That's a lot to do, buddy. I give you credit.
Well, on the high school level, I've been doing play-by-play for Space Coast Daily, and hopefully I'm going to be doing that again in the fall because I really enjoy the people that I work with there. So, you know, same thing with the play-by-play guy for football. Yeah, you should have trying to. We usually don't really have a spotter. There's not, like, enough room in the press box. So sometimes me and my color analyst have to try and, you know, pick that out. And, you know, I don't even think the NFL radio announcers pick out the tackle after every single play. I mean, I think it's good if you can do it. But, you know, especially if you have the hurry-up offense.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, Steve Englehart, yeah, I love the guy, but I'll tell you, these no-huddle offenses, you know, if you're a play-by-play guy or PA guy, you're going crazy because you're trying to sort out the last play, and they're already up at the line, and the next play is off, and it's like you can't catch your breath.
There was
that was a challenge.
Okay, there was a game. We're here with my good friend J.C. Meyerholtz. I remember Florida State, it might have been the start of the 2014 season, where they had a neutral site game. I was trying to think who they played, maybe like West Virginia or something. So Florida State debuted these new kind of jerseys with their new logo, and the jerseys were so hard to make out for play-by-play, the refs, the PA announcer, something. And I'll find you the jersey. The numbers were kind of, they were kind of weird looking. So everyone in the stadium was having problems trying to figure out who's on what play, what's going on. So I think about that when you talk about those stories.
Well, I'll tell you, no matter what the level of football is, if you're a fan going to the game or you're the PA announcer or you're the play-by-play announcer, friendly uniforms to the eye are really strongly appreciated. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was living out in California, I did Burroughs High School in Ridgecrest, California. I did them for like 5 years. And I remember doing a game at Apple Valley, which is down, you know, kind of, you know, towards Southern California, but kind of to the east. And beautiful high school stadium. I mean, I think college teams played there as well. But I did Burroughs and Apple Valley. So I'm doing play-by-play, and I'm up in the press box. And I'll tell you, I think the worst color combination imaginable, and we were pretty high up. So it's like, you know, you're a mile away from the field, and the lighting isn't that great. But Apple Valley had, like, orange numbers on black. Now, that's pretty bad. Orange numbers on black. That is really
bad.
Big blue on white, that's a good color combination. I mean, just something that stands out. Wait. Boy, orange. You know, orange is real smeary, and you can't really – or how about yellow? How about yellow on white? Ugh.
Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. Is Coco High School those colors, if you think about it? I got to look this up.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the Coco home jerseys are kind of difficult to read. Now, when they're on the road, if I'm doing a Coco road game, which – you know, I did Coco a lot with my good friend Juan Rodriguez last year. I hope, you know, he and I are teaming up again. When we did a Coco road game, it was easier. Their uniforms are more visually friendly on the road than they are at home. I'm trying to remember at home. I think they're black jerseys, and it's just hard to see the numbers.
I'm looking at photos of Coco High School. And by the way, they're awesome. I love that school. They've been so dominant here in Brevard County. I could see why that would be tough. It really would.
I'll tell you what. John Wilkinson leaves. He had, like, what, three or four state titles in a 10-year period. And then, you know, Ryan Schneider, the former UCF quarterback, comes in, and he really hasn't lost a beat.
No.
I don't think he has won a state title yet, but he's continued the tradition. I think they have about 10 years in a row or something when they made the semis of the state. I mean, that's quite a run.
They are awesome. And Coach Snyder's doing a great job. I always love talking football with him. And especially, you know, he's a coach and then former player there at UCF. What do you got coming up here over the next couple of weeks for sports? Like, are you done now or what's going on?
Well, I'm waiting for the USSSA Pride schedule to come out. They're going to have kind of a modest home schedule from what I hear, but I haven't seen anything released yet, but they should be starting in about a month. So I'm really quickly anticipating the schedule coming out, hopefully this week or next week. But I think it's only going to be like a 10-game schedule and only a couple of teams in their league. So they're just kind of doing a potpourri kind of thing is what I hear. But, you know, until I see the schedule, I'm not totally sure. Florida Tech's all done. I'll tell you what, baseball, I had two walk-off games that we won that were very exciting to do against Palm Beach Atlantic. We had a game-winning single last Friday night, and we were two outs, nobody on, down to our final out. We were, we were two runs down, so we're down to our last out. We get a game-tying single and then a game RBI single. Then we had a Paul Castillo hit a dramatic two-run homer on Sunday in game two, where that game was back and forth and really a great game, and we won it in the bottom of the 11th. I did 20 innings on Sunday,
the
9-inning first game, 11-inning second game. So that was a long Sunday.
Yeah, that really was. Speaking of baseball, how are your Mets looking so far?
Oh, they're doing fine. They won again last night. They came back, beat the Nationals. August of last year was when the Mets had their meltdown, and that's when, you know, DeGrom got hurt, and they just kind of went into the tank. They're surviving fine, you know, without DeGrom. So if DeGrom comes back, you know, say in the next month and a half, I think is what they're, you know, predicting. I mean, that's only going to boost the Mets' chances of trying to stay ahead of everybody in the NL East. I mean, McGill has been a big surprise. You know, Carrasco, you know, he had a couple of good years with the Indians. Then he had, he had cancer and had a battle through that. He's quite a story. And he's off to a good start. So, and the Mets are hitting, which is nice, because usually when the Mets go into a slump, every hitter goes into a slump at the same time, and the Mets can't score. This year, you know, getting Escobar and Marte have really helped. So I'm optimistic, but, hey, we're only in May. You know, we got to get to the end of September. It's a long season. It's too long, in my opinion.
This is my thing with the Mets, and you know this better than anyone. It's like they were good last year at this time. And they were good till the trade deadline, and then it kind of fell apart. So I'm like,
well, I think the peak was they got up, I think, five games over the Braves, or it could have been six. I think they're up by six now. But then I'll tell you, I forgot what their record was after August 1st, but they were like 10 or 15 games under 500. I mean, they just had a meltdown, and nobody was hitting, and DeGrom got hurt, and I mean, they just finished terribly. So hopefully, with the bolstering of the lineup, they'll at least, you know, win 85 to 90 games, maybe a little bit more, and hopefully win the division. But, you know, the Braves and Phillies are tough. The Braves are kind of struggling, but I expect them to get it together. You know, you might remember the Braves were struggling last year. They got it together, and look who won the World Series.
Dude, they lost their best player and then got better last year.
It's Acuna, like, yeah. Well, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, they're off to kind of a slow start. I think they're starting to get it together. You know, the Phillies should be pretty good, but you know, you probably remember last week the Mets had a 7-run ninth against that woeful Phillies bullpen. So that was good to see if you're a Met fan.
Dude, I said this yesterday. We'll end with this. So my White Sox were on a 6-game winning streak and swept the Red Sox in Fenway.
Nice.
Then, okay, so they win last night against the Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever they're called from Cleveland, the Guardians. Yeah. And so 2 nights ago, they have a 6-game winning streak. They go to the ninth inning. They are up 8-2 at home. They then give up 6 runs in the top of the ninth inning to tie the game. They go to extras. Then they give up another run, but then the Sox score in the 10th. So they go to the 11th. Then they give up a 3-run homer in the top of the 11th, and then they lose. They give up 10 runs in the 9th, 10th, and 11th inning combined. And then they've won 7 of 8, and the only loss was that horrible bullpen explosion. You can't make that. 10 runs, buddy, in 3 innings and extras.
Well, especially late in the game to go that many runs. But I'll tell you what, they were really struggling for a while. So
yes,
this last winning streak that they're on, you know, has to, you know, create some optimism for you, because they were kind of scuffling for a while, and now they appear to be back. And they should be the team to beat that division. I'm not surprised the Twins are doing well. I think they have a pretty decent club. You know, last year I think it was kind of an aberration for them. You know, sometimes that just happens. You have a bad year. So that division's
it's interesting.
It's pretty good. I mean, I was going to say the Indians, the Guardians, they might be okay. I'll tell you, I love baseball and following all the different races. And, you know, the AL East, I mean, that's just a brutal division.
Aaron Judge had the walk-off last night. Yankees are the best team so far this year.
Yeah, as John Sterling continues to say, all rise for the Judge.
Judge, you know what? Contract year, he's been great. He really has. And I saw the Rays last night. I think they got no-hit by some rookie for the Angels, who've been a surprise. That also happened.
Well, I'll tell you, the Rays won like their first 6 games of their Western trip, which is really hard to do. I mean, they went to Oakland, Seattle, and I think they won every game. And now they've all of a sudden they've lost 3 in a row. And you're right. What's his name? Dietmers did the no-hitter for the Angels. The Rays lost 12-0. You know, that tells you it's a long season, because the Rays should be pretty good, but even they're going to have a 12-0 defeat on their hands. So, you know, it'd be good for them to come home. They've been on a long road trip, and, you know, still a winning road trip for them. And I like the Rays. I like Kevin Cash a lot. So a Mets-Rays World Series would probably be my dream World Series.
Who are you rooting for in that World Series? Who you got?
Well, off the roof of the Mets, but I mean, I like the Rays a lot. I really do. I mean, they're kind of most fans who follow baseball, but they're not ardent Ray fans. They probably can't even name one player on the Rays. So they're kind of an unknown team, but they've got a lot of good young players who they're not spectacular. Well, I guess, you know, Wander Franco is becoming well-known, but, you know, try and name me 3 or 4 other Ray players in that team. I could barely name them. But Wander Franco, he looks like a star.
Look at you talking trash. I like it. I like this from JC. You know what? If Mets are in the World Series, and I've been around you when this has happened, JC goes to killer mode. He wants that championship. I don't blame you. I really don't. Jason,
I'll tell you, going back to 2015, that Mets-Dodgers series, that was some series.
Oh,
I mean, the Dodgers, you know, the Dodgers were favored. I mean, the Mets, you know, the Mets were pretty good that year, but the Dodgers were, like, powerful. And, you know, the Mets lose at, what was it, game four at Citi Field. They got to go back to L.A. for an all, you know, winner-take-all game five. And the Mets won 3-2. And what a game to watch. That was a tight, well-played game. And, you know, the Dodgers got criticized a lot. Oh, they couldn't win the big game at home. You know, the Mets played a great game that night and won, but that was a great moment. And, you know, the Mets lost to the Royals in the World Series. That wasn't so great. But that was a fun team. Can't believe it was 7 years ago.
That is crazy. His name is J.C. Meyerholtz. J.C., thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it, and have a great day. All right, man?
You too, Mark. Thanks.